Mortimer, Shaw, Williams, prepared to adventure down the left. There's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Will! Villa in the lead!
Hi, welcome to the Aston Villa Life podcast. This is episode 2. With me, as usual, is Dan Bardell from the Birmingham Mail and a Villa fan. How you doing, Dan?
I'm all right, thanks, Matt.
Good stuff. So, obviously, Villa take up the headlines quite a lot recently. The most recent event that we've had at the club, well, one of the many recent events that we've been in the media for has been Remy Gard's leaving and Eric Black taking over as caretaker manager. So, as we saw with his pick for his team that lost, unfortunately, 4-0, there wasn't much change, really. What do we think, then? I mean, Eric Black's in place. Remy Gard has been sacked, rightly or wrongly, for not delivering the results. Can we really get the same sort of results from the same sort of players?
I think now we're just waiting until the end of the season. I mean, I don't see any way in which any manager is going to come in and take on this side. Maybe once relegation is confirmed mathematically, possibly someone will come in. But I just don't think that anyone is going to want to work with this bunch of players this season. I mean, that's 4 different managers we've had in the dugout at various points through the season now, and none of them have been able to get anything out of the players. And for me, also, that's 4 managers in a row now that have made bizarre team selections, things that you shouldn't expect to be seeing, like Lescott and Richards paired together at centre-back. It hasn't worked all season. You know, you've got a caretaker manager in now in Eric Black. He's obviously not going to get the job permanently, so you'd think that he might want to, like, make a statement, maybe put a youngster in like Jordan Lydon just to get the fans back on side a bit. I mean, I can understand that people will be of the school of thought that, you know, it's not the atmosphere to be putting a youngster in. But for me, that's the kind of thing that can change the atmosphere. The fans need something to get behind. And to be honest, the same old faces, they aren't giving the fans anything to get behind. They're just causing the fans to get more irate, seeing these same people playing every week, the same people making the same mistakes. The defence was a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. And as you can see, it went off and we got hammered yet again.
So what do you think then, Dan? Obviously, you've mentioned Jordan Lydon then. I mean, what's your opinion that we should throw some youngsters in, blood them, give them a chance to gel? I mean, what is the thought? Or is it more the fact that youngsters probably are going to be providing a bit more commitment? And obviously, that's something that fans keep talking about, this desire they don't see from players. I mean, what is it that you're expecting that you think somebody like Jordan Lydon or say Russian Hepburn Murphy or similar might be able to do?
I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, I've not seen much of Jordan Lydon. I've seen reserve highlights. I've heard good things about him. But he's going to be someone that's going to be in and around the team next season. He's probably going to be starting. So it makes sense to blood him now. And as I say, the fans are just fed up of watching the same faces. They want to be galvanised. They want something to get behind. And they can't get behind these players because some of them they know aren't going to be here next season. And we know already that a lot of them aren't good enough and probably aren't going to be good enough for the Championship. I mean, we're playing Rudy Gusted as a lone striker. I don't think we put a cross in all game on Saturday, not that I remember anyway. I mean, if you're not going to play to his one strength, there's no point playing him. So why not stick Russian Hepburn Murphy up there or get Andre Green on the wings? You know, the fans want to see something different. We've been watching the same old garbage all season and it's not even getting better now. It's just getting worse.
No, I certainly exactly see where you're coming from at the end of the day. It's been a very, very challenging season, as you know, and some of the candidates who have been involved, like you've mentioned, you know, Mika Richards, Jodian Lescott, Alan Hutton, people like that, you know, they've not really been very convincing in their displays, to be honest. I mean, Joris Okorie obviously had done okay and he was involved in a partnership and that seemed to have worked out. But again, I think it's difficult really to sort of single out individuals for criticism. I mean, Villa have, by all accounts, really had the most diabolical season in recent years. And it is challenging. I mean, I think it'd be interesting to bring some of the youngsters through. How many we're going to bring through, I don't know. I mean, for example, people like Gary Gardner over at Nottingham Forest, I think, has definitely got a role to play next season when he comes back. Whether or not we can just purely go on the base of youth, I really don't think so. I know certain people on Twitter have been very optimistic with the idea that we could potentially throw in an academy team, but I think there is going to need to be an augmentation there. But you're right, I think a lot of the team really haven't delivered the goods, to be perfectly honest. And that kind of leads us on to the next topic that I wanted to talk about, really, which was booing your own players. Understandably, it's been a very emotional season. Villa are rooted to the bottom of the league. They have been for much of the entire campaign, really, to be honest. So, I mean, what do you think about this booing your own players idea? There's the idea that you pay a lot of money in a lot of situations. I mean, I know the tickets near where I am individually, if you want to buy one match, is £47 a ticket. That's quite a lot of money if you want to take a family of four, for example. What about booing your own players then, Dan? I mean, understandable, people are emotional. Is it the right thing, though?
I mean, in previous seasons and throughout my whole time as a Villa fan, it's been something that I've always been dead against. I mean, obviously, this season, there's going to be a collective booing because, quite frankly, we've lost almost every week, so there isn't much to cheer, so inevitably people are going to boo. I mean, Bakuna came on Saturday, which I don't understand why Eric Black thought it was a good idea to throw him on in that environment when the fans were getting hostile. But I can understand on this occasion why he was booed, because his comments he made into the press were idiotic and ill-judged. What made him think that talking about Champions League when he's been a big part of a team that's heading down to the Championship? I don't know why players feel the need to say these things. I mean, I've said it before. I mean, the Liverpool game that we lost 6-0, he was the worst player on the park by an absolute mile, and there was a few candidates that day, by the way. But his touch was awful. He just didn't look interested. He barely broke into a walk. And then to come out and insult the fans the way he has and say, oh, I think I'll look to leave. I think I want Champions League football. I mean, unless he's got a mega, mega good agent, I can't see how he thinks he's good enough for Champions League football, because he's one of the ones I'm questioning whether they're up to it in the Championship. So although I don't agree with booing of your own per se, on this occasion, I find it completely understandable, because the fans are frustrated. And if you're going to be stupid enough to say what he said in the press, then the fans are going to jump on you because they weren't that keen on him anyway. And this is just added to the hatred, for want of a better word, around him.
Yeah, quite flippant here. I must admit I'm saying this now, Dan, but I take it you don't think he's ready to go and play for the likes of Bayern Munich then?
I don't think he's going to get a call, to be honest, from Ancelotti when he joins. I don't think he'll be the first person on Ancelotti's call list.
No, I think it's a fair point, to be perfectly honest. I think, like you say, it has become very much a case of every man for himself, unfortunately, at Villa in recent times. I mean, Remy Gard, before he left, was saying, you know, the players aren't offering the commitment. And it did make me laugh to a certain extent. I mean, Bakuna to suggest that he would actually be playing for a Champions League team when, quite logically, he's going to be playing for a Championship team next season is mind-boggling, really. Sometimes I do wonder what goes through the heads of players when they're talking about this sort of thing and what agents say to them. I mean, I know when we had Christian Benteke, who admittedly has been, you know, not particularly great at Liverpool, was performing particularly well for us. You know, his agent was in his ear talking about what he could do and what he couldn't do, and he could get a better move and the rest of it. But I think with regards to Leandro Bakuna, I think he's he's barking up the wrong tree, to be perfectly honest. He may well go back to the Eredivisie, possibly. You know, he may well suit himself there, but
I've watched some of those games at work. I don't think he's good enough to play for Ajax or PSV, like he was suggesting, to be honest. And the other thing that's frustrating and annoying as a fan is the guy signed a new 4 or 5 year contract in the summer. Where's the? I mean, I don't want him to stay anyway, but where is the loyalty? You've just signed a four to five year mega bucks contract. It's just a complete lack of respect, and I think that's been the problem. That through the whole season, there seems to be this discord between the fans and the players. They just seem miles off each other. If players don't want to take responsibility, they don't want to take the flack. They're not putting in the performances or even the stuff they're doing off the pitch to give the fans anything to get behind at all.
No, I agree. And like you say, football's a very sad situation, isn't it? Where you can do well and you sign a contract and you guarantee you're going to be there for 5 years, and then suddenly you start doing well, you don't want to be in your contract anymore, do you? But you can guarantee that if you're doing really, really poorly, they'll be waiting out to the very last day and the very last minute of that contract and getting paid out for it, which I think it's a pretty, really broken system, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you know, it is an issue. And I think it's sad because we have lost some good players, really. And really, one of those is about to win the title. Mark Albrighton, who signed for Leicester a number of years ago, is now about to basically win the title with Claudio Ranieri's team. I thought that would have been absolutely unthinkable last season. They were rooted to the bottom of the Premier League for a long period of time. Again, I think this is what a lot of Villa fans were holding out hope for, that there was going to be some kind of resurgence the same way as Nigel Pearson managed to do it for Leicester last season. Mark Albrighton leaving though, Dan. Right decision, wrong decision? Where did we go wrong?
I mean, I think at the time, I think he probably would have wanted to have stayed, but Villa wouldn't match the money he was going to get at Leicester. And to be honest, at the time, I'd have certainly agreed with that decision. It's all well and good now, people saying, oh, we should have kept hold of him. But I was quite content to see him leave. And I thought Leicester would probably be the right kind of team for him, a chance for him to refind himself, rebuild his career. But I never envisaged the path that he and Leicester would take compared to the path that we've taken since he'd gone. I mean, at the start of the season, I was a bit naive saying that I don't think Albrighton would get into our team. Now, I couldn't have been more wrong, because he'd probably be the first name in the team sheet if he was playing like he is at Leicester, and if he was still at Villa Park now, he'd walk into our team. But it's all with the benefit of hindsight, isn't it? At the time, as I say, I think it probably was the right call. He wouldn't have been worth the 30 or 40 grand a week he's been paid at Leicester. If we'd have paid him that, you'd have said, you'd have questioned what the board were doing. But obviously, we've made a lot of other questionable decisions that probably put that into perspective anyway.
Well, I think for a lot of players, I think it's about who's around them, isn't it, at the end of the day? I mean, I think if you introduce Mark Albrighton back into the Villa team, would he be able to perform? It would be the question, really. I mean, we've got the problem at Villa in comparison to Leicester, for example, is that the core of the team is just not there. There doesn't seem to be a consistency. There's talk of rifts between English and French players. Centre-backs don't seem to communicate with themselves or communicate with the partners they've got there. It doesn't work out very well. This idea that Albrighton come back would be kind of a panacea to problems. Like you say, it's great because that's a hindsight thing to say we never should have let him go. But, I mean, Jack Grealish, for example, plenty of potential there. Obviously, you know, perhaps not as much of a diligent professional as he... as Albrighton might have seen. Certainly, I've not seen Mark, you know, reported to be doing X, Y, and Z outside of the football. But, I mean, would Jack Grealish work well if Jack Grealish was transported into the Leicester team? I mean, would he be likely to be able to be a suitable candidate? Because it's the easy thing to say is Mark could come back and could do a job. But isn't it just really about the togetherness of Leicester, you know, without getting away from Villa for too much here? But isn't it more about that that's kind of made him a success rather than anything that's improved since he's left as an individual?
The thing is with Leicester, they have an identity. The way they play, they have an identity, which is something that we don't have at all. Our team selections and formations all through the season have been muddled. And the other thing as well is Leicester, they play simple football. And to be honest, I think that probably plays into Mark Albrighton's strengths. He's doing what he's good at. He's getting the ball, maybe trying to beat his man, or he'll whip in a first time cross, and that's what he's good at. Leicester are playing to his strengths, and they're reaping the rewards of playing simple football, which is something we haven't done. And I think players sometimes that they're better off getting out of Villa Park. I mean, I don't for any minute want Jack Grealish to leave this club in the summer, but part of me thinks this guy would be a lot better off if he wasn't at Villa. It's almost a pressure on youngsters to succeed at Villa nowadays. They come in, and if they're not world beaters, they're almost taught down by our own fans too quickly. I mean, I've seen it earlier in the season when Grealish gets the ball, people expect him to take on three or four men and not the ball in the top corner, and it's not going to happen. I think sometimes there's too much pressure on the young kids at Villa, whereas at Leicester, Albrighton, although he's not a kid anymore, There's no pressure. Well, there probably will be next season now, but this season there's just been no pressure. You just go out there and play. The fans will back you. I mean, Villa, to be fair, the fans haven't had anything to back, so it is a two-way street. It does work both ways. But if you take youngsters at Villa, they are under too much pressure.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, really? I mean, you talk about the academy and people who have come through it and people who have failed, so to speak. And perhaps, you know, gone on to do not mega, mega careers, but you look at Stephen Davis getting at one point because of Gareth Barry, and they were thought to be very, very similar as players. And he left, obviously, and has moved on and went to Southampton. And he's done pretty well as a result of it. And I think part of it is this kind of sad desperation that we have as fans, really, is that we every time we have a young player come through, they're seen as the holy grail. You know, we need to get this person into the team. We need to do well. We need to start putting in people like Jack Grealish and making it happen. And then they get crushed underneath the weight of expectations. I mean, that's part of what concerns me about the idea of playing the youngsters. It's not so much that they're not capable. It's that Villa has become this kind of crucible of pressure, really, for many of the players. You know, they come in, they haven't got a very good team around them, and they fail as a result of it. And you look at Mark, and he's gone over to Leicester, and he's done a pretty solid job. Now, I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that Mark Albrighton's a world beater. I don't think Mark Albrighton himself would suggest he was a world beater. I don't, you know, foresee him going off to play for Real Madrid and being, a Gareth Bale or a Cristiano Ronaldo or any stretch of the imagination. But it's that simplistic football that you've talked about, really. It evokes memories to me of when we used to have Young and Downing in our team, and we'd cross in balls for them, or we'd get balls crossed in from them, or people like James Milner. And people would say, oh, it's only 4-4-2. It's only wingers. It's really, really boring. It's really, really, you know, Neanderthal in style. But people complain if we went back to the Martin O'Neill days. I know we would have arguments about finances and how they were spent and players who we purchased to perhaps a very, very poor people like Habib Bey and the likes. But, you know, I think this idea that we have to play this kind of tick-attacker football that I think some fans, not all fans at all, have decided to think that we need to pursue, you know, we need to get a foreign coach, we need to get things moved forward on that side of things. You know, it's a bit of a challenge, really, because Mark works very, very well in a good system. The major problem that we've got, as you've mentioned before, is that Villa don't seem to have a system. They don't seem to have a plan of what they're doing. We've gone through how many formations this season? It's been very, very difficult. Part of it's just physically the players. You know, it is those players who are a major issue. And that pretty much brings us on to, I think it's your favourite player, I think we'll be talking about now, Dan. I am, again, being slightly flippant saying that.
But, I was going to say, I don't think I've got a favourite player nowadays.
Yeah, but the Huttonator, Mr. Alan Hutton, the man who has...
Oh, yeah, he's my real favourite.
Yeah, zero wins under his belt. Now, admittedly, Villa haven't exactly had a flurry of wins to be saying about things, so it's not too much of a direct comparison between 0 and 15 wins. He got sent off recently, obviously. You know, this idea that he's a passionate player. He does a good job and he sort of motivates the team with his efforts and commitment. Is it all a bit of a smokescreen, though, to be honest, Dan? I mean, this idea that he is a passionate player, that he puts towards efforts and he, you know, makes the commitment and moves on runs and the likes of it. He's got no wins. You know, where's it all going wrong for Alan Hutton, Dan?
I mean, obviously, we've talked about Lescott and Richards and obviously the fans are all right with that, Bonlahor and people like that. But for me, Alan Hutton's in the same boat. He hasn't won a game all season. The only decent run we actually had this season was when we beat Norwich and Crystal Palace and picked up, I think we drew with Leicester around that time as well. The only good times we've had this season were when Alan Hutton was not in the team. And I also don't think it's a coincidence that at that point Guzan was out of the team. I think if you took Guzan and Hutton out this season, I genuinely think we'd be a lot closer to safety, because I think between them, they must have cost us into double figures on goals. I mean, Hutton, he does come, I'm sure he does care. He comes across like he cares, and as you say, as you've alluded to, he comes across like he's got the passion. But for me, he's shadow boxing. The amount of times when you see the ball come into the box and you think, where's Hutton? And you see him trotting back from another failed attack. And maybe I am being harsh. Maybe it's not his fault, because I do think at times we treat him like he's Hector Bellerin or Kyle Walker running at the line. Quite simply, he's not up to that. That's not what he's good at. I mean, I'm not sure particularly what he's good at, but that he's going forward certainly isn't what he excels in. And I just think the time for him to come out of the team was at the start of the season. The only time, I think, I don't know who was at right back the games that we won. I think it was probably Richards. But Hutton has not been up to it all season. But yet, for me, he's the only player that really has the fans sing the name of nowadays. And that's quite depressing as well, because for me, he's our worst player.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm probably going to, you know, offend one of my good friends on Twitter, Murph, who seems to like Alan Hutton quite a bit, to be perfectly honest. He talks about him very, very highly. He gets forward quite a lot. And I think the major problem with Alan is that he can attack, but can he defend, really? And the major problem is, obviously, he is a defender at the end of the day. And if the fullbacks start getting forward, and you look at the calamitous pairing that we've had on the likes of Jody and Lescott and Micah Richards, they're not going to really be able to cover the ground themselves on that, are they? It's going to kind of split them apart at the end of the day. I think he does offer a lot of passion. He is very physical, you know, and I think to a certain extent, there's a kind of slightly masculine way of looking at it of, oh, you know, he's a hardcore guy. He's going to give him the effort. He's going to go for it. He's really, really good for that. But I think zero wins says it all, really, to be perfectly honest, Dan. And, you know, zero wins is not a very, very good statistic to have for you at the end of the day. Certainly if he's going to be looking to leave the club, whether or not he will or not, you know, whether or not that's to make, you know, raise money for the club or elsewhere.
I don't think we'll be getting much money for him.
No, I don't. Would be too perfectly honest. You know, I think
you've been very kind saying he was very good going forward as well. to be honest.
Yeah. I think he's you know, he was okay at Spurs at the end of the day. Obviously, Spurs have gone in a slightly different direction to us. I still remember moments when we were under O'Neill, where Spurs and us and Everton were seen to be fairly similar teams at the end of the day. And, you know,
heady days.
Yeah, quite. And Spurs, you know, I don't think they actually are going to win the title, you know, despite the fact they are going to run close. And I think, in a sense, without getting away from Villa too much, it's sad for Spurs, because I think had it not been for this Leicester fairy tale story, I think there'd be a lot have been made of what Pochettino's done there at the end of the day. I mean, they've, you know, they're obviously a few points away now from Leicester at the moment, but they've done really, really well. You know, I mean, they've always been seen as nearly men teams at the end of the day. And I mean, I think we're getting away from the topic completely, but
again, now you're talking about Spurs, but they've got an identity, they've got a style. It's no coincidence that the two teams that are at the top of the top two in the table are the two that you probably say have got the strongest identity and got the set ways of playing.
Absolutely,
they're the two that are doing well, and probably the team with the least identity and no set way of playing is us, and that's why we're bottom.
Yeah, exactly. Like you say, consistency counts for a lot at the end of the day, Dan. And when you haven't got it, it's a long road back, isn't it? And speaking of a long road back, obviously this weekend it could be the time where, depending on how results go elsewhere, we mathematically may be down. Now, I know Newcastle United fans have been laughing about it quite well. I'm not entirely sure, considering they're probably going to be coming with us at the end of the day.
I hope so.
Me too. You know, I'm not just saying this because I've got Sunderland fans who probably will be friends of mine who'll probably be listening, but I've not got a massive amount of time for Newcastle. But the impending relegation, obviously, it's likely it's going to happen this week. If not, it'd be certainly not going to be too far from now. Where next, then?
We'll certainly be going to Burton Albion and Warsaw.
Well, I mean, what does that say about Villa's plight, to be perfectly honest? No disrespect to Burton. I live in Staffordshire, so they're not too far from me at the end of the day. And it is really, really nice to see a team like that coming up. But I never imagined in a month of Sundays that we were playing against Burton Albion. But hey-ho.
In my lifetime, I've certainly never experienced us playing Burton or Warsaw. I mean, I barely experienced us playing Wolves and Blues with their brief stints in the Premier League. But for us all to be in the same league next season, does, again, no disrespect to Burton or Warsaw, it shows how far we've fallen. And it's genuinely upsetting, because when I was growing up, we were up there. We've never been great, but we were always there or thereabouts. We were always top six, challenging for the Coca-Cola Cups when I was a kid, getting to FA Cup finals even though we lost. And there's just now there's nothing to get excited about. And that's the thing with kids. I worry about the next generation of Villa fans, whether there's going to be any, because I've certainly witnessed it from where I sit this season. I'm watching kids beg their dads to go home after an hour every week. They don't want to be there. There's nothing to get behind, and there's no excitement for them. If I try and think back to when I was growing up, we had heroes. There was people I could adore. I could sing their name. There's nothing for kids growing up now to get behind at this club, and it is sad.
So what do you think is going to be the next step, Ben? I mean, obviously we're going down. That's, you know, barring a miracle on the level of the second coming of Jesus, I think, pretty much.
Yeah.
We're going down. What do you think is going to be the next step, really? I mean, we've talked about, obviously, they are going to be going to the Championship this, you know, next season. Certain fans on Twitter, I think, perhaps are going slightly over the top and thinking that we're going to be dropping down to League One. Now, I must admit, just offering my side of the fence, I don't think that's really going to be the level. But the concern, I'm guessing, really, for many, is do we rebound? I mean, I think there was a recent statistic to say that of the 30 people, or the 30 teams that have gone down to the Championship from the Premier League, that only 8 of them have rebounded immediately, you know, that they have to come back. And it's,
that doesn't bode well.
No, it doesn't really. I'm not trying to depress people as a result of listening to this, obviously, but what do you think is going to be the situation? I mean, my honest opinion, again, being candid, I'm probably going to get shot down for this, is that, you know, we may be stable in the Championship. And what is that going to do for the club, really? I mean, parachute payments only last for a finite period of time. Where do you think we're going to be, Dan? Are we going to come straight back?
I think much depends on the managerial appointment. I mean, it seems finally, after the whole time in Randy Lerner's tenure, that we're starting to make decent headway in the boardroom. But now this new board face probably certainly the biggest decision since I've been a Villa fan. This next appointment is absolutely massive. They have to get it right. For all the last few managers we've had, and I don't think they're all bad managers, I genuinely think Remy Gard will go on and be a good manager somewhere, but we now have to appoint the right man to bring the club together, unite the fans so that we can all become one. But I don't know who we could get that everyone would agree on. Obviously, everyone's got different opinions. There's some people who think Nigel Pearson. A lot seem to be leaning towards David Moyes, who, to be honest, I think is, although he wouldn't be my personal choice, I think he's the one who would appease the fans and get the fans together more than any other appointment, because he does come in with at least with some pedigree and some experience of building something and having done work in what was probably Division One at that time, now the Championship. I mean, Pearson is mentioned as probably one of the favourites. For me, I don't want him to come in because, one, he comes across like he's an absolute nutcase. And although I think the players do need their heads banging together, sometimes things can go too far the other way, and I worry what that would do to us. And also the fact that his coaching staff are all still at Leicester. They ain't going to come and join Villa next season. That's not going to happen. So you're again asking someone to come in and coach a team without his coaching staff. And we've seen with Tim Sherwood, who wanted Chris Ramsey, and we've seen it with Remy Gard, who, the name escapes me, wanted his guy to come in and work as his number two. Yes. They couldn't get their number twos, and we've stuttered as a result.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Like you say, if you don't bring your coaching staff, I think a lot of managers can struggle. Not to say everybody. I mean, you know, it's not the universally accepted that if you can't bring your coaching staff that you will have issues. But it is challenging, as you quite rightly say. At the end of the day, Leicester are challenging for the title. You know, if you're going to be a coach, as much as you might have a nice friendship with Nigel Pearson, are you really going to leave the champions of England and go to the championship? It's not very likely. I mean, I suppose technically, you know, the manager side of things, I know one of your favourite candidates, Mark Warburton, has pretty much said he's not going to be coming at all, that's because he's talking about Celtic next season.
Yeah, disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, what was it about Mark Warburton that made it him the ideal manager for you then? Is it something specific? Was it something about his experience that he's had before?
First off, I think it's mainly because I'm quite local to Brentford and I've lived around this area for the last 8 to 9 years now. So he's always someone I've kept my eye on because I've always heard good things about him in the football world. I just think he's a savvy manager, the kind of manager that would come in and give you an identity. I know I've been harping on about it a lot through this podcast, but Villa needs an identity again. They need someone to come in, galvanise the fans, galvanise the players. And I think Warburton's the kind of man to do that. He's kind of like the best of both in some ways, in that he will knock a few heads together. But I think he's also got the other side that you need, whereas someone like Pearson will come in and could potentially be a ruthless nutcase, which... the answer. I mean, if you look at Warburton's win percentage at Brentford, it sits at around 50%, which is an excellent ratio for a team like Brentford. I mean, he got them up from League One, and then they came very, very close to getting into the Premier League in his final season. I think they got knocked out of the playoffs, I believe. And then he's gone into Rangers, who obviously they should win most of their games in Scottish football, but he's got them at a ratio of 80% as well. And I just think he is the right kind of character, the right kind of manager to get Villa back moving in the right direction, because I think he has a plan wherever he goes. And as I say, he has an identity. And some of the managers mentioned, like Steve Bruce, for example, he may well get you up, but I don't think he'll keep you in the Premier League and establish you there. And that's what we need, someone who can do both. And I think Warburton's that man. I just have a feeling for him. And I think sooner or later, he's going to end up somewhere and become a very, very well-respected, good manager in the top leagues.
Well, I don't doubt that. I mean, like you say, if he can get the pedigree right and do well at Rangers, I think he's always got a chance of moving on. It's funny talk about ex-Rangers managers that, you know, Alex McLeish, before he actually went to Birmingham City, was actually seen to be a really, really good manager and assessed to be almost too good for Birmingham City. And obviously, he came along and he didn't do as well. And obviously, you know, did even less well, we'd argue, probably at Villa Park at the end of the day. So it's a difficult one, really, in terms of who we pick. I think, you know, Pearson seems the most likely candidate. And he has got a certain degree of, and I don't want to go so far as to say aggression, but passion that maybe might push Villa on. And I think he can crack some heads. The difficult thing is that when you're dealing with multi-million pound athletes, there's a certain degree of how much you can motivate somebody just by being a hard person, shall we say. Because at the end of the day, the player power is there, isn't it? You know, he can get aggressive with them. I mean, I remember with Martin O'Neill having a disagreement with Nigel Riococo a number of years ago and a fight on the ground. And, you know, it's not always necessarily good for harmony at the end of the day. I don't doubt for a second that Villa needs to change. I think the question comes, as you've mentioned before, about the making that right decision. This probably is the most, you know, challenging decision of who we appoint for a long, long while, to be perfectly honest. And just to finish off, Dan, you know, I'll offer my thoughts of who I think right at the end, but I'm going to run through a couple of managers who have been linked, some probably less likely than others, and I just want to hear your thoughts on them. So Steve Bruce, you mentioned before, what do you think?
Not for me. I think with a lot of people as well, just coming with the Birmingham City connections, there's a certain element that will never, ever accept that. So he'd be a no for me.
Gary Rowe?
No way. I'm going to completely contradict myself now with what I've just said. But we know Gary Rowe is a Villa fan. I'd accept. I don't think he'd come, but I'd accept Gary Rowett because, again, I think he's shown that he can build something. He's done good work at Burton, and Blues were in an absolute right mess when he took over, and he's turned them the other way without really spending very much. It's pretty much the same bunch of players. And again, like I said about Warburton, I think he's a savvy guy. I'd take Rowett, but I don't for 1 minute think he'd come.
Sean Dyche.
I'd be reasonably happy with Dyche, but I think Burnley are looking like they're going to go up, so I don't think he's going to turn down another shot trying to keep Burnley in the Premier League. Again, I'd take him, but I don't think he'll come.
No, I agree. I think it's very, very unlikely. People have said Villa's a bigger job, but just to be selfish for his own right, you know, he's brought Burnley up to the Premier League before. He's going to bring him back up again. You're not going to leave halfway through it. How about somebody who else has brought people up from the Championship? Mick McCarthy.
No, again, I don't think he'd be one to appease the fans. I mean, he got Wolves up. I think they stayed up in their first season. I actually quite like Mick McCarthy. I think he's a funny guy. He's a good manager. He's good at what he does in the Championship. But I think where he is, Ipswich, I think that's probably his level. And I think Villa's probably too big a club for him. That's just my opinion.
No, I understand. I actually think he's quite an affable character, like you say. But the thing is, Tim Sherwood's quite an affable character for going down the pub, you know, having a pint with. But I wouldn't have hired Tim Sherwood in a million years either. So Mick McCarthy, I think, interesting candidate. And I think, you know, he has kind of made overtures to say that he'd be interested in moving, you know, to Villa. But, you know, I don't know. And I'm going to go for another few more now. And some of these you might think are slightly humorous, shall we say. And that's probably because partially they are, really. But Dwight York threw his hat into the ring. I mean, John Gregory's response on Twitter I thought was absolutely fantastic, to be perfectly honest. I already thought John was a fantastic bloke anyway. But what do you think then? Is Dwight York likely to get a job at Villa?
First off, I'd like to young John Gregory to come back and take us on, because I think under Gregory, that was certainly my favourite time as a Villa fan through my childhood. Completely agree with John Gregory's reaction. It's a complete farce that he thinks he can just come in and walk into a job like that just because he's got the backing of Sir Alex Ferguson and because he used to play for us. I saw a great tweet from someone yesterday, I can't remember who it was, saying Dwight York seems to remember that he played for Aston Villa whenever the manager's job becomes available. And it's true, because you don't ever hear him really talk about us otherwise, but he seems to come alive when he thinks there's a chance that he might get a job. But there's more chance of me getting hired as Aston Villa manager than there is Dwight York, in all honesty.
So should we put a cheeky tenner on you then, Dan? Is that your secret tip for the end of the podcast? £10 on Dan to be the Villa manager. No, I'm being sarcastic there, mate. Well, so that's Dan Bardell's views on who's going to be the next Villa manager. You'd like it to be Mark Warburton, I think. But Dan, your fond decision of who you think is actually going to be?
I'd be absolutely flabbergasted if it wasn't Nigel Pearson. I think it's his job to lose.
Yeah, I must admit, that's probably my thought, really, to be honest. I think it'd be interesting to see how he gets on without his coaches. But, you know, again, I think it'd be Nigel Pearson. So for the second episode of the Aston Villa Life podcast, it's been me, Matt Turvey, and Dan Bardell. Dan, thanks for the time, and no doubt catch everybody soon.